How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Remember reduce, reuse, recycle? Well, this month, sustainability advocates are putting special emphasis on reducing. There's a movement called Plastic Free July, which aims to bring awareness to the waste and pollution created by making and overusing plastic products. So I sat down with Karen Weigert, Reset sustainability contributor and the director of Loyola University Chicago's Baumhart Center for Social Enterprise and Responsibility. Plus, I spoke with Liz Kunkel, who's the Zero Waste Policy Manager for the Illinois Environmental Council. I started off by asking about the purpose of Plastic Free July and how exactly it works. Like, is it totally plastic free? Here's Karen.
We're shooting for the totally, totally. But
totally,
the,
totally?
Yeah, but the fact that you have to ask the question just tells us it's not the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And Plastic Free July has actually become a global movement. So 100 million people, 190 countries. And it was actually started by a woman who toured a recycling facility and was kind of horrified by how much she saw. And the next month was July, and she asked a couple friends to try to go plastic free with her. And that was 2011 in Australia. And
oh, wow.
Here we are today all still learning about this and trying to figure out how to reduce those single-use plastics in our own lives. And that's what this is all about.
So there's the making of single-use plastic items, Liz, and then, of course, we have to dispose of these items. So starting at the source, how is the state of Illinois particularly affected by plastics production?
Thank you. Primarily because, in general, as many of us know, Illinois is a manufacturing hub where we've always been known as a center, a crossroads of manufacturing, of innovation, technological innovation. So companies, facilities, entrepreneurs are drawn to our state. They know the ground is fertile, literally and figuratively. But for some enterprises, that's not always the best thing for Illinois. And we think that's the case in terms of some of the plastic production facilities that are very intensive, have a lot of negative consequences for the environment, for the humans, for the communities in which they're being placed.
Mm. And we know plastic is recyclable. Why is there so much waste?
Well, so some plastic is recyclable. Obviously, many people have been confused, understandably, over the years about what kinds of plastics are recyclable. So generally hard-sided plastics are recyclable, typically in curbside programs. It's the softer plastics that cause a lot of the problems and complications. Like plastic bags, newspaper sleeves, dry cleaning bags have often been accepted through separate channels, like through grocery stores accept them,
mm-hmm.
but they're not accepted curbside. And then again, similarly to where there's kind of a subset of the hard plastics that are recyclable appropriately, there's only that limited category of soft plastics that mm-hmm. can also be recycled mechanically, relatively safely. But we've had such a proliferation of all the soft plastics in packaging, and that is outside the scope of facilities that we have. So that's where all the waste is coming from.
Period. Yeah, and Karen, Chicago, we have a pretty dreadful recycling rate. It's like 9%.
It has not been a source of strength historically. I think that's very safe to say. And the plastics situation is even a sore spot within that. And it's as Liz was saying, it's really a global issue. Something like half of all the plastics ever produced on Earth have been produced since the year 2000. So we're seeing huge, huge growth.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a match with the infrastructure in terms of recycling, even if people are trying to do everything they can individually. So, you know, a lot of the questions are, how do we reduce the production? How can we slow plastics coming into our economy and therefore slow them going into our bodies and into the waters around us and the air around us?
Yeah. Well, we're not just talking about landfills today, right? I mean, plastics have an effect on Lake Michigan, the Great Lakes at large too, Karen. Talk about that.
Yeah, there's data actually from a few years ago that even then, 22 million pounds of plastics are going into the Great Lakes every year, and about half of that is into Lake Michigan. So that's just a huge, huge number. And then we've got data from beach cleanups and river cleanups that shows the majority of the things people are pulling out are also plastic. And then you marry that with this really insidious little piece, which is that it's believed that most of us are ingesting about a credit card-sized worth of plastic potentially every week. So you're seeing plastics all around us. And what you see typically is the bigger plastics, but then they're breaking down and becoming smaller microplastics and ultimately nanoplastics. And those little itty-bitty pieces are things where there's newer research and we're just learning about the health implications. But we're seeing it in the waters around us, potentially even in the air.
How can we still participate in Plastic Free July, Liz? I know we're at, the 17th now?
Sure, there's plenty of time. So first of all, Plastic Free July, as with other campaigns, it's a way to raise awareness of the issue, but hopefully it's not the only time that people will be changing habits. As a general environmentalist, I like saying, April 22nd isn't the only Earth Day. Every day is Earth Day. So to me, and probably to Karen, every month is Plastic Free Month. Every day is Plastic Free Day. Mm-hmm. And to your earlier question, as much as we want to get to zero waste or no plastic, there's also no judgment. Any efforts to reduce use counts.
Yes.
Near zero waste.
And we're not just talking to individuals to change their behavior. We want corporations,
exactly.
Organizations.
Exactly. So it's individuals starting. Again, make some changes in your own habits, but don't limit it to that. And join groups, join beach cleanups, join community groups, see how you can amplify your impact.
Yeah.
And then, obviously one of the things IEC works on is lobbying and advocating for change at the state level. And for most people, we want people to know it's easier than you think to contact your local elected official, whether at the city level or the state level. Mm. And they are their constituents. They
right.
want to hear from you. They want to hear your concerns. So we've been encouraging people to reach out to their elected officials, let them know what there are concerns, their health concerns, their environmental concerns around single-use plastics. And there are a couple bills that are pending in the state that would help manage and reduce the
volume.
Yeah,
so talk about that. There's legislation that's on the table, or in some cases have been passed, to restrict the production of certain types of plastics, right?
Yeah, so less so on the production side so far, more so on the waste side.
Okay.
There's some, almost a series of bills that relate to reducing polystyrene use in the state. It started with a bill that passed in 2022 and went into effect in 2023 that restricted state parks from using polystyrene. That was a big, huge step forward. That ban was extended to vendors that service state parks in 2024. And then in 2023, a separate bill passed that was Senate Bill 58, and it expands the polystyrene ban to all state agencies, not just the parks.
Oh, okay.
That begins in 2025 and then again is extended further to the vendors of those agencies in 2026. And the bill that's pending now, HB 2376, would extend the ban further to all retailers.
Okay.
So it would make it harder for consumers to get those bags at the point of sale.
So Karen, talk about what's happening on the city level. I mean, it seems, hearing Liz talk here, that this is a win for sustainability advocates as well as for the movement. I know you were the city's first chief sustainability officer, so talk about some of that progress that was made on this front.
This is an incredibly important topic that has multiple prongs for action, and as we've been talking about here, from individuals all the way through policy and then to manufacturers. But we've seen some progress in Chicago and actually nationally. And if you think about the big win was several years ago, and that was plastic microbeads that you were in so many personal care products.
Oh,
and
the
then
amount
we're ending
of reports
up, yes,
I did on microbeads as a reporter. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
So
what a pain.
That's a federal action that we've seen. And we've seen work from there all the way down to work in the city. There's been some work in Chicago on the policy side, trying to reduce single-use items from restaurants. The policy there isn't super strong, but it is a beginning policy as we think about those opportunities. And you then see these actions that Liz is talking about at the state. So from the city to the state to the nation, mm-hmm. ultimately to the globe.
All levels.
Are steps that can be taken in here.
Yeah.
And it starts with what we do as individuals, but part of what we do is, you know, vote, reach out to our representatives, and then choose how we spend our dollars.
But how do we handle the challenges, though, like when some organizations just aren't on board with sustainability and just aren't jumping to go green?
I've heard rumors that there are organizations like that out there. Like anything, they're carrots and sticks. I think one of the really important things is to show organizations and businesses that there are markets for sustainable action. There are opportunities for customers to grow their engagement with organizations who are finding ways to reduce packaging. There are also cost reductions. One of the great things about plastic is it's often waste in the system. And so if you reduce your plastic use, if you make the plastics thinner, as an example,
yeah.
or if you have fewer layers of packaging, you can save money in that way. So I think there are multiple carrots in terms of economic incentives, both on the revenue side and on the cost side. And then there's always that really important level for any massive change on what's the policy foundation. How do we ensure that everyone across the country is growing up in safe, healthy environments? And you often need policy to spread those actions.
We've been talking with Liz Kunkel, who's a zero waste policy manager for the Illinois Environmental Council. Thank you so much for joining us, Liz.
Thank you so much for having me, Sasha. And thanks, Karen.
Karen Weigert will stay with us. Now, speaking of making progress, I want to take a look at a business that's taking strides to combat single-use plastic usage here in the state. Kadea is a company which claims it can eliminate the need for single-use beverage containers. Manuela Zonenstein is the founder and CEO of Kadea, and she's on the line with us today. Hi, Manuela.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Tell us, what is Kadea? What's your company all about?
Kadea, as you said, eliminates the need for single-use beverage packaging forever. And we actually do it at a third of the cost compared to single-use. So as Karen was saying, you know, having these economic incentives is really valuable. The way we do that is, now take a leap for a moment in your imagination.
Okay.
We've designed a bottling plant, and it's the size of a vending machine. So to the consumer, like you and me, you go up to it, it's just like a vending machine. You pick what beverage you want. You want your Diet Coke, you want your Gatorade, your sparkling water. We've got it. Unlike a vending machine, you then return the bottle, which is made of infinitely reusable stainless steel, to any station in the network. So think of us as Divvy Bikes for bottles. You're just borrowing the bottle to enjoy the product inside. And then our patented station itself inspects, washes, sanitizes, dries, and then refill the bottle for future consumers in an infinitely circular loop.
Interesting. How did you come up with this idea?
You know, it's not rocket science, right? We have dishwashers in the world and we have soda fountains, and that's basically what the machine does, mm-hmm. is combine those two. I was living in New York City and walking by City Bike, and I don't remember the exact moment, but I started saying, why can't we do bike sharing for bottles? And I literally started saying that out loud to people. And the first question was, well, how are you going to get the bottles back? I tested that, and we're now at 99% bottle return rates with no penalty or deposit. The next question, of course, and then COVID hit, how are you going to sanitize the bottle? And we spent a lot of time and resources on designing what we think is the world's best bottle wash system.
Yeah.
So, you know, there were these little steps we had to take to overcome small hurdles, but again, it's not rocket science. We're not putting a man on the moon. This is totally reasonable. It's real. We're doing it today.
Yeah, I like your outlook. Where are these machines going to be installed, Manuela?
Our go-to-market, you know, it's a business term, focus is industrial workplaces. Basically, where people work on their feet, not on their seats. They're doing construction work, manufacturing work. We actually have won 2 major grants with the Air Force, so military bases, places where hydration is really critical to the performance of the population. And the employer knows this. So the employer currently uses mostly single-use bottled water to hydrate their workers. And it turns out the problem there is it's a logistical nightmare.
Mm.
Every bottle that you consume as an individual or can, it goes through over 30 steps to get there. And most of them are manual. I mean, if you go to a vending machine, that vending machine was loaded by hand, one bottle at a time by a human. And so it turns out when you're servicing a large population of industrial laborers, that becomes a real nightmare over and over again. And so what Qadea does is eliminates all the logistics, and it's a fully autonomous self-sustaining unit. You plug us in, you get unlimited bottled water without the waste.
WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
So how much of a dent would you say that this is making in plastic waste, these machines?
So I'll start on a per machine basis, and then go upward from there. So per machine, we estimate we can eliminate over 100,000 plastic bottles annually. Okay. And that's just for, we can support between 100 to 500 workers at any time. So it's a massive amount per station. When you scale that up, we think that we could actually eliminate all single-use beverage packaging. You know, we're spending $500 billion a year on beverage packaging. We think that we could move that over instead to Qadea and literally get rid of all those single-use cans, bottles, but also we can do the hot beverages. So coffee cups, we could do beer, we can do wine. So really, anytime now you look at a single-use beverage, think of a Qadea stainless steel bottle in its place, because that's the vision. And from a carbon perspective, we've estimated that single-use beverage packaging is responsible for 1.5% of global emissions. You might shrug your shoulders at that, but aviation is responsible for 2%. We're all, you know, freaking out about how to reduce our carbon footprint from flying. Well, while we wait for sustainable aviation fuels, I say we can start sipping sustainably today with Qadea. And we can all be part of the solution together.
Karen, you're smiling from ear to ear. What excites you about Qadea?
It's such a great example of ingenuity, of things that we can immediately understand, and yet it just solves a problem. You know, when I was talking earlier about the waste that's found in the lake and in the river, so much of that is actually related to consumption, to food and drink. And this is an example based in Chicago that is looking to solve that. And even the example of aviation, you know, we have other companies in Chicago like LanzaJet that are looking at sustainable aviation fuels and building a huge plant in the U.S. We've got all kinds of innovation that's happening here that is picking off parts of these sustainability challenges, finding value propositions that matter, and improving people's lives and the environment at the same time. This is an interesting example.
So we talked about the state and city level efforts a moment ago, you know, to reduce waste. But tell us, I mean, how big a part of the solution are new ventures like this one, you think?
Oh, this is the piece that we have to see how big they all grow. The fact that I could easily rattle off multiple companies that are here that are building viable for-profit models that relate to sustainability is really, really interesting. We also have a series of investors who are based in Chicago and in this region who are finding ways to deploy their dollars from VC up to private equity, who are finding scalable solutions. So there are lots of companies that we're starting to see that are growing, that are hiring workforces, and that are building business models where there's a win for the economic. There's a win for the consumer, and there's a win in it for this planet where we all live.
Manuela, how big is your reach right now? And tell us how big you're hoping to be. Where do you want to take this?
Yeah, well, all of our units for the next 18 months are going to be within a three-hour drive of Chicago. We're a squarely Midwest-focused industrial solution to begin with. And for context, that's a $30 billion market in the United States, just hydration. So it's a massive market opportunity there alone. That said, single-use beverage packaging, non-alcoholic, globally is a $1.5 trillion market. And I've got my eyes set on that. I like to say we're the Tesla of hydration, and I'm going to be the next Elon Musk. So, you know, get involved with Qadea today, and you can say that you knew us way back when.
All right. We've been talking with Manuela Zonenstein, who's founder and CEO of Kadea, as well as Karen Weigert, who's Reset's sustainability contributor and director of Loyola University Chicago's Baumhart Center for Social Enterprise and Responsibility. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Jules Yeager and Linnea Dominic, edited by Meha Ahmed and mixed by Max Lubers. If you're interested in more conversations about sustainability and the environment, jump on over to wbez.org/reset for our full archive of interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening. We'll talk again this afternoon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.